What is an intimacy coordinator, and how can they help you have a safer and more productive set? If you want to learn how they can be integrated into your set to help you with future problems and even help make your scenes better, you got to listen to this episode. Whether we're talking about intimate scenes between two humans, we're talking about some kind of torture scenes or anything with trauma, or even scenes with minors, we shine a light on this very important and not very well-known position in my conversation with intimacy coordinator and actor, Chantal Cuisineau. This is the Working Director Podcast, a show that helps you go from emerging filmmaker to working director. As a filmmaker living in Los Angeles, I've directed over 130 projects, including 6 distributed feature films, all while helping filmmakers figure out how to level up in their careers. I do this show with one goal in mind, to help you become a working director. And if you want to join us for the live Q&A sessions and ask all of your questions, make sure you join our free private Facebook group by going to theworkingdirector.pro. Let's start with first just the most obvious question, which is, what is an intimacy coordinator?
An intimacy coordinator is a department head position. So it coordinates between all the different departments on set to facilitate scenes of hyperexposure for performers, trauma-related scenes, or anything, you know, ultra vulnerable. So nudity, simulated sex, and trauma-related scenes.
So I didn't even know that trauma-related stuff was part of it. So that's, you know, good to know.
I think that the role is expanding a little bit as we see what affects performers the most and where those pitfalls lie. So I've worked on scenes with military torture, things of that nature. So you'll have the stunt coordinator. But then when it comes to advocating for a performer and giving them a code word that they can use if they need a break, and also anticipating both performers' experience in that space, it really helps to have someone who is not wearing 15 different hats, which is the director, to kind of be looking out for those maybe sometimes nonverbal signs of discomfort or need for more support.
I love that this role has been created. I think as women filmmakers, we tend to be more in tune to what's happening. Sort of like you say, nonverbal clues and things. We're always a little more conscious of making someone comfortable. I remember when I was acting a million years ago, I was supposed to be on set for this like one little thing. And I was brand new, very green. It was probably the biggest film I had done at this point. And I remember the director being like, would you take your shirt off? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, would you at least pull it down? And I was like, no. And I don't think all actors would be comfortable saying that. It's been hard getting producers, especially in the indie world where we have way less money, to hire your position.
Well, I think that the more people find out about it and the more people understand that you're there to support, you know, potential, you know, problems and prevent problems from coming up, because what happened to you on the set was on the day, but there was no preparation for that moment. So you were sinking on your feet, you were on your own. It's a very isolating experience to be, you know, kind of put on the spot that way, sometimes in front of a crew, double your age. It's very overwhelming. But in this position, I work in prep. So a lot of my work happens before I even get to set. And so I've spoken to the director and the producers sometimes, and they talk to me about the needs of their production as a whole, or just the scene specifically that I'll be coming in for, and getting a clear vision. How many cameras, you know, what does this look like? How many setups? You know, what are you going to see on camera? What do you want to focus on? What is everything? Like, I ask all of my questions, and then I get that clear vision from the director. And then I speak to the performers one-on-one, if there's more than one in the scene, and then let that information land on them so that when they process that information, they can have their initial surprise, freak out, and I am not their employer. So they're not having to disclose any personal physical boundaries that they have to their employer, which was highly problematic in the process before intimacy coordinators. And so you have the performers who are getting a clear vision before they get to set, and they have you know, thorough steps they can take if they need extra support, what they can expect from me. They can craft that however they need. They want to see more of me, less of me. They want to be able to reach out and have me that close off camera, or they want to see nothing to do with me. They want me near the monitor, making sure that their nudity rider is being adhered to. So there's just all of these different needs that need to be met. The director, you know, gets their vision, and they don't have to worry about walking on a landmine where they say, okay, now put your hand in their hair. And that was a red zone. That was like a, I don't want anyone touching my hair. And then they've said that, and they've inadvertently, like, there's a trust that's been broken, you know, and it can really cause a costly hiccup, you know, both with time or money, both. And so it's important that the directors know what direct, you know, what to expect on that day. Performers know what to expect from their director. And then the producers don't have to just be sitting in their trailers going, oh my God, I hope this goes well, which is how I think most people traditionally felt. They were just hoping people would come out of their trailers and do the scene, you know, and I think we can do more.
Have you had any points where there's been conflict on set where you've really had to stand up for the actor versus what the director wanted?
Usually on the day, we've already agreed to everything. So the needs have been met, whether it's been finessed or changed or shifted, or we've masked this or talked to camera and had things kind of moved around. But we agree on the day is not the time to be shifting a lot of, although things change. Maybe instead of shooting it first thing, they're shooting it at the end of the day. That's information that needs to be processed. It's best if those, you know, situations can be processed with people that they are not responsible for their response to those changes when it's problematic or challenging. But yeah, things constantly change on set. But what can't be done is when there's intimacy and there's been an agreement, there cannot be additional nudity or additional, you know, simulated sex or anything like additional to that contract. That starts a 48-hour clock again. So you want to make sure that those contracts have been looked at. The nudity rider is the contract, and everyone has looked at it. It has been provided 48 hours before the day. And then on the day, there can be less, but there cannot be more. So if there is more, then we need to discuss this for a future date. And we need to explain to the people who may not be aware that that's, you know, these are new contracts since 2020. The SAG-AFTRA contract allows for 48-hour clock to fully understand what they're going to be expected to do.
And so even if, let's say, the actress is like, oh, I'm fine with it, we can do it, do you kind of come in and go, no, we have to wait 48 hours.
If it's a performer-led change and the performer is on their own, then that's fine. But we can't have even like one performer saying, you know what, I don't mind, because the other performer in the scene also needs that 48-hour. And it really puts them on the spot if they're uncomfortable with those changes to be made the reason why this can't happen or take place. So, you know, I've seen a lot of parodies where my position, you know, character goes, we can't do that. And it's all very nerdy and very funny. But on the day of, it does fall on my shoulders to say, you know, we can't make these last minute changes. But I do go through all of these things during prep so that I can make sure that we've had, you know, what we want and maybe a little bit more in case there's some creative differences, because sometimes the performers wonder if they're going to be comfortable. And then they get on set and they're feeling creative. They're in, you know, they're in the groove. They feel safe with their partner. The, you know, communication between director and performer, it's all working so well. You just go, let's just do anything. And, you know, that's great that that's happening, because it's a great sign. But we cannot go beyond, you know, what has been agreed to by all performers and production, unless it's performer led, like, say, one, you know, it's one person in the scene, they want to go further in their scene, then they can do a contract after the fact.
Because when you're on set, especially, there's a lot of either pressure or just that creative energy. And I think it's important. Your role is important because an actress, especially, might in the moment be like, yeah, let's do it. And then later have regrets, but it's too late. It's already on film. If that happens, because the contract didn't allow for whatever happened on set, let's say she was only supposed to, you know,
show half a breast and then she decides to show full nipples. Let's just say for that, right? Now we're on set with, we've got that on film, but can she then go back and say, well, I didn't contract for that. I don't want that in the film. Is she still protected?
Well, first of all, there won't be the shooting of the nipple because it's not on the contract. So that's, I mean, if you're not going to see nipples, I usually do something where I'll cover it with something you're not going to want to see on camera, like something that the camera is really going to be like, oh crap, that's going to cost too much to take out. We're going to make sure we don't see it. So nice. There'll be something, there are protocols in order for to, you know, see those moments in advance because accidents happen, let's see the camera, whatever. But it has to reflect the contract. As far as once it's on camera, once it's been shot, it belongs to production. So no, there are no changing of your mind after the fact. And so that's why the conversations before are very thorough. And they go far and wide, sometimes beyond what the scene is, just to see, you know, how you feel, you know, and then there's the time period to think about it and sign it. You can sign the contract on the day. It just has to be provided to you 48 hours before. So there is a considerable amount of time that you can think about what it is you're signing and what you're getting into. And of course, consent is reversible. So on the day, you can arrive and things can happen. And you can change your mind, in which case a body double can be brought in. The body double cannot do more than your contract allowed. So they're bound by your nudity contract because it will appear like it's your body and you doing the action. So if that were to happen, the person would have to adhere to the contract and follow those same regulations.
Since you've been doing this so much and you've been around various directors, various casts, various type of scenes, do you have suggestions for directors who are going to be directing intimate scenes on how they can best approach the blocking and, I guess, the comfort and trust level of their actors?
If I were to suggest to a director on how to approach the scene so that it has the most chance at success, it would be finding out in advance that you have scenes like this. You know, and allowing for the time to do prep, you know, with your intimacy coordinator and just giving your carte blanche, like your full vision. Like if you could just imagine the scene perfectly as you wish for it to happen and sharing that, which, you know, sometimes those thoughts and, you know, and those shots are just in your head. And as a director, if you don't storyboard it, it just stays there and people are on a need to know basis. But the more you share with your intimacy coordinator, the more they can share with the performer. After that conversation has happened, I don't take place of the relationship between the performer and the director. Once they are on the same page as far as what to expect on the day, they do communicate before the day and they have that, you know, considered thoughtful conversation. But they're on the same page already. So there's not like, gosh, if I say this part, if I say that word, you know, like, how are they going to react? Like, is it going to seem crass, you know, because everyone is worried about what this is going to look like. What is this going to sound like? And so by putting them in the same room, having had that conversation about boundaries, I can tell the director, I wouldn't refer to this as that. You know, I wouldn't say simulated sex. You know, I wouldn't call it a sex scene. I would call it a simulated sex scene. You know, I would call it, you know, so I will meet whatever, you know, criterias will like give them the most success between the two of them. And I like to think of myself as like a foster parent. Like I'm not trying to adopt this performer. I really just want to foster their relationship and make their relationship stronger.
We have some questions coming in. This kind of goes with the rehearsal question. David says, can you talk about pre-production a little bit to prepare actors? I know in the series, the last thing he told me, the actors did intimacy sessions to build a comfort level with each other.
It's great when you can have that. That's a great question. It's great when you can have that extra time. That's why I love those student film situations where they have a whole day. You know, I came on as an intimacy coordinator during the pandemic. So back in 2020. So it was really challenging to get with people. It was hard for performers Like, that was the concern. It wasn't like, I'm afraid they're going to do too much or they're going to do something I didn't expect. It was like people were literally afraid to like be within each other, within 6 feet of each other. And so there were a lot of conversations to have about prep. So the more prep, the better. Time spent together, not always necessary. I think that sometimes that initial, you know, get the performers in the same room, walking them through the blocking, hands are going here, movements are going there, looks a little bit like a dance. And that choreography lets people know like what's going to happen. Different performers desire different levels of choreography in that. And sometimes that choreography can come directly from a director, because sometimes directors have a background in that kind of thing. And they're very comfortable having those conversations, in which case I'm just there as a support, standing back and watching and adding, if anything, to what's already being discussed. And then on the day, if this was a before the day preparation on the day, people understand what to expect. You know, being on set, coming together after that choreography really allows people to settle into their nerves, you know, and find themselves grounded. And it builds trust, you know, but not everyone has that luxury of time. Some people are working multiple projects and they come to set and they just need to get the scene done. So in that case, providing them with the support they need, as little or as much as they want.
John has a question. Despite the best intentions of being sensitive to the needs of your scene partner, what might be overlooked by an actor in the absence of a coordinator that we can be cognizant of the future?
I find that when people are nervous, they tend to fall back on humor. And there is very little about these scenes that are, you know, funny. They can be uncomfortable, but either way, like, people are usually feeling very like worried about how they are perceived on set and how they are perceived on camera. And so they're very much, you know, they're nervous. And so, you know, some people go, well, I like to say things like, I'm sorry if I seem, you know, aroused, and I'm sorry if I'm not, you know, but those kinds of jokes, just any reference to your body or to their body, making any references to each other's bodies is frowned upon in the absence of an intimacy coordinator who would gladly tell you that in private. And just having, you know, the most, if you're worried about being insensitive, then the chances are you're going to be sensitive. It's when you're not really paying attention to what other people might be feeling around you that, you know, there stands a chance at being, you know, crossed wires and misunderstandings. But most of all, I am not there as like the sex police. You know, I'm there to enhance the performance of people who would otherwise have to make up, you know, in their minds what is expected of them, and then worry that it doesn't meet the needs of the director. So performers can rest easy, directors know what they're, you know, getting themselves into, and producers can rest well knowing that they've provided the best for their performers.
Your presence helps there not be issues later, meaning, you know, if there's an actor who is in their best intention and is doing everything by the book, and then later, you know, maybe the other actor, man or woman, either way, decides they were uncomfortable with that. We don't have that. If you have your intimacy coordinator on set, you don't have that worry later, because everything's worked out. Everything is watched over. It's almost like when you have the set teacher for the kids who's protecting the kids. It's kind of the same situation with you.
Absolutely.
It's just a lot more responsibility, I would say.
Yeah, it's a lot of responsibility. And recently, I have been working a lot with children, because historically, children have been working, you know, with these fake families and showing all of this familial intimacy, the hugging and the kissing and the tucking into bed and bath time and all of these vulnerable situations with these adults that are not their family. And we have seen and heard stories of people feeling less than comfortable in those situations, but having to push through. And push through is the compliance-based, you know, shooting. And now we're looking for consent-based. So being on set for my minor performers, I have been, you know, there might be like some big conflict between, like fake conflict on screen between the parent on screen and then the minor performer. And it's a yelling match on screen. But how do you explain to the child's body that that is not a real argument, you know? And that takes preparation and that takes explanation. And in order, if there's a shift in that child's perception of what's going on, they need a code word. They need something to tap out. And so that support, again, it's not traditional. This is new and it's expanded work based on what we're seeing young performers say once they've become adults. I don't remember making any creative choices. I just remember being celebrated for being a really good listener and doing what I was told, you know? And so now I want to be an adult performer and I just want to do what I'm told. And so they don't have that, you know, framework for consent versus compliance. And so I'm working with minors for that.
Cassette teachers they're not on set. They're off set. They're not that person. So that's great.
Yeah.
Alexander asks, how would one pursue a career as an intimacy coordinator? What would the starting point be?
Well, having set experience in and of itself is a must. So I was an actor for 20 years. And I then, during the Me Too movement, came forward about an experience I had a long time ago. And that disclosure brought over 1,500 people telling me how they were harmed in the workspace or in the pursuit of work. And so through harassment or assault. And so having that information, I went to the union and I helped them craft and build, amongst other people who helped them, stronger contracts to prevent harm. And so after that, I found this position and I took a 6-month course through Intimacy Professional Association, IPA. And from that, the moment I finished that course, I was booked on a Lena Dunham movie. So I took off running.
It's called Intimacy Professional Association.
That's right.
Just putting that in the chat for those so everybody can look that up if you are interested. Is there also a place, which will also lead into David's question, but is there a place for people looking for intimacy coordinator to go? Is the IPA a place to hire?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the website at IPA will have the intimacy coordinators that are represented by IPA because they also, represent intimacy coordinators. But SAG-AFTRA has certified and qualified intimacy coordinators on their website. So if you seek the SAG-AFTRA, the union here in the United States, in Canada, ACTRA is the union, and they have intimacy coordinators that they can point you to. And then there's websites. You can find us. We're out there. We're available. But finding the right fit for your production is also important. People might think, you know, you and me, we get along and that's a great fit. But we really do need to know what your intimacy coordinator sees for the world that you're going to be creating on set. And you want it to make sure that it's a good fit, because it can be a great intimacy coordinator, but not a great intimacy coordinator for you.
And on that note, David says, as a producer, how much should I be budgeting for a day rate if I employ an intimacy coordinator? Now, obviously, with all positions, it varies. But what would you say is like sort of the starting rate?
I would say $900 to $1,500 a day for an intimacy coordinator. There are weekly rates. They are similar to stunt coordinator rates. So if you look at, SAG-AFTRA's, we're not represented by SAG-AFTRA, but we work closely with them. And our pay structure sort of mirrors their stunt coordinator contract. So you can have your intimacy coordinator for a week and it would be lower rates than the daily. And then you have independent films that have a smaller budget, in which case the intimacy coordinator will be paid the same as all your department heads.
Well, we are out of time. Thank you all for such amazing questions. This has been super informative. I would say that probably everybody watching is here because we just had no clue exactly how you fit into the plan when it comes to set. And this has really cleared it up. So I appreciate your time and you joining us. Is there anything, any last thoughts that are coming to you that you would want to leave people with?
No, I just think this is a great jumping off point. So I hope that you all keep asking questions and keep looking for more podcasts with this information.
Thanks for listening to the Working Director Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please rate and review as it helps others find the show and helps us keep making great content for you. And if you want even more help with your directing career, check out theworkingdirector.pro, where you can apply to be part of the accelerator that hones in on where you currently are and helps you get to where you want to be. Whether it's this podcast, the accelerator, or our free Facebook community for directors, we're here to help you get to work.